Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, usually focusing on Kenpo, but we cover all the martial arts around here. So I am Reggie Darden, as always, and I am truly excited, once again, at a loss for words, that I have a great, great guest today. I got Mr. Keith Cook, and for those that probably don't know, he is a world champion martial artist, a movie star, just all around amazing individual. And so, yeah, I'm just really, really excited to have him on. For those that might not know, I wonder what you would say your most known for role has been.
Well, it's got to be one of the Mortal Kombat roles. It's got to be Reptile in the 1995 Mortal Kombat, or Sub-Zero in the 1997 Annihilation, Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
One of those. Excellent, excellent. Yeah. I first got hooked onto you from China O'Brien with Cynthia Rothrock.
Right.
And was just like, hey, this guy, he's got the goods. So,
thank you.
Yeah, that's when I first saw you. I recently rewatched King of the Kickboxers.
Okay,
did some excellent work in that. So,
thank you.
King of the Kickboxers also had a starred Billy Blanks. So,
yes.
So that was a fun film. You were also in Beverly Hills Ninja, which I rewatched not that long ago with Chris Farley. So yeah, you've definitely done some good things and good action. You're also in the I guess it's not yet released Cynthia Rothrock's Black Creek.
Yeah. Yeah, had a blast doing that. Really great cast that we call the Black Creek family, and it was great to work with Cynthia again. I'm hoping we'll do a China O'Brien 3.
Ooh.
Eventually.
I like the sound of that. I like the sound of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But I love working with Cynthia, and she's a very hardworking, dedicated individual and very talented. And, you know, I just had a blast, you know, because I never thought, you know, I would get the chance to play a cowboy, but I did on this. So it was a lot of fun. It was a good character role. You know, I just had one small fight with Don the Dragon Wilson.
Oh, very nice.
It's pretty short, but cool. And it was great to work with him for the first time. So, and also Richard Norton is in it, who was in China O'Brien. Yes. So it was kind of a reunion of the China O'Brien cast. You know,
very nice. Very nice.
It's cool.
Yeah, we definitely need more martial art movies and martial art shows and just martial arts out there in general, in my thought. I mean, it's nice that we have got the John Wick movies and stuff and things like that. But I kind of miss the just kind of dedicated martial art movie. You know, they don't have to have the best story or whatever, but just to see some good fight scenes and things like that to log into is always something that I'm always looking forward to. So
maybe they'll make a comeback.
Well, I hope so. So, yeah, that's why I'm excited for Black Creek and kind of having the old guard, I guess, so to speak, of action heroes, making a comeback is nice to see, especially, For those of us in a certain age, it's good to see those that are a little bit more seasoned still able to get out there and kick butt and do good things. So, you know, let all the young guys and gals have their fun, but we got to get out there and show them how it's done. So I like that. So before we get into your story and your journey, we talked a little bit before it started recorded, and I just kind of usually kick things off with just a little quick rundown of my background. I started in Chinese Kempo in the 90s, early to mid 90s. Did that for a few years, left for the Army. While I was in the Army, I did some boxing and Taekwondo and Hapkido. Got out of the Army and then got involved in Capoeira. And that is probably my secondary or tied with first core system, Kempo and Capoeira. Been doing that for a lot of years. I now do American Kempo, and I recently got started in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai. Then I've restarted doing Hapkido as well. So I stay pretty busy. I just love the training. I can't get enough. There's not enough hours in the day to do all the training that I want to do. But you know, we make do with what we can, and enjoying the journey. So that's kind of my little rundown there. So we will turn it over to you. Where did you first get started? Where you know, how did the martial arts find you?
Well, I was
where did it all start?
It was like, for a lot of people, I saw Bruce Lee and I was just blown away. I saw Fist of Fury and The Chinese Connection, and I saw Enter the Dragon, which was my favorite movie. And I just think, you know, he has so much charisma, and, you know, I was kind of a kid who felt like I got picked on and stuff like that. So, you know, I was like, man, I want to be like that guy, you know? And so I found a place back in 1973 in Seattle. My first instructor's name was Roger Tung, T-U-N-G. He was originally from China. And I wanted to do Kung Fu because Bruce Lee did Kung Fu, or at least that was my perception of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I didn't really understand, I think, the differences, or if there were differences or whatever. I kind of like what Bruce Lee says about style. He says there's no such thing as style. And I think usually people bring their own style to whatever they do, you know, because of their nature and their bodies and, you know. So, but I love to think, you know, like I was, when I was fighting in karate tournaments back in the day, I thought I was a fighter, you know, like, and then you see what people are doing now and you're going, oh my God, this is, you know, but I did get into boxing and kickboxing and competed in both boxing and kickboxing. I was president of the boxing club at the University of Washington for 4 years. And I got into it because whenever I got in close with someone, you know, inside of kicking range, I always felt like, mm-hmm. like I couldn't see what was going on. And I love the thing of, I think everybody should box, actually, because it's, every martial artist should experience that, where you only have your hands as weapons. Mm-hmm. You know, it develops that ability to watch things, you know, closely, at a close range, and you get used to it. So it's not so panicky anymore when you're in there.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I loved my experience in boxing. I fought in like four smokers, you know, because we had a coach who, at the University of Washington, who was an ex pro. I think he was light heavyweight and heavy. And he wasn't like a known, his name was Van Taylor, and he wasn't a known well-known guy at all, but he was a really nice guy. And he also taught at the Boys Club and somewhere else. So we would have what we called smokers against each other. And it was just a great experience. And the University of Washington, the Intramural Sports Building, had a boxing room, which is unusual. And I think the last time I was there, I saw they took the ring out because there was a ring and they had heavy bags and then they had a speed bag room right there. And it was just, you know, it was unbelievable. And we used to have, you know, after a while, I was mainly staying at the University of Washington so I could get into the IMA building, you know, and practice with my friends and stuff. And Maurice Smith, who became heavyweight UFC. He was the first striker to win the heavyweight division in the UFC. And he came down there, got to train with him. There was a guy named Leon Preston who used to be a running back for the Baltimore Colts. And he had the Taekwondo club there. And he was a tremendous athlete, man. I was so lucky to get to train with him because, you know, like anytime I went to a tournament, it felt like a day off because these guys were so strong. But I was just lucky. Couple other world champion kickboxers trained there too. A guy named Rod Key, who was a very lightweight guy, and a guy named Victor Solier that I got to train with down there. And it was just, it was pretty amazing. And a lot of top karate guys would come in there on Friday nights. We had like Friday night sparring night. It was a blast. And I loved that place. And I moved down to, I went to China to train in Wushu in 1980 for about I was there for over 3 months and just training every day. And we went to the Jiangsu province team, which is in Nanjing or Nanking, Nanjing is what it's called now. And that was a really good experience too, because I got to live basically there with the athletes, and they're in the dorms with, you know, all the other athletes, the divers, the, you know, the badminton players, the basketball players. And they trained 6 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Oh my.
And they would, you know, we would go have, we'd had lunch with them on the break, and then we'd get a break and we'd go back for that afternoon session. And, so you get to see how, you know, professional athletes would train and be a part of it, you know, because I didn't know how to do that. And, you know, I thought, you know, you just train hard, you know, and it was really nice to see people train twice a day, you know, and that it's a normal routine for them to do that.
Yeah.
And when I got back, I started doing that. You know, if I was working and I had to be to work at 11, I would go to the gym at like 7 in the morning. And then when I finished work, you know, I would go back to the gym in the evening and train. And I tried to train with as many different people as possible. And, you know, I competed a lot up there, so I knew a lot of guys who were top competitors, and all of them wanted to train. Like, if you say, hey, you want to get together sometime and work out, everybody was like really open about that. And I love that stuff. My instructor didn't like it when I trained with other people. So if I remember right, I snuck sometimes. I just didn't tell him. I just went and did it, you know. And then he started getting used to it, you know, and didn't worry about, you know, I wasn't like looking for a new instructor or anything like that. I just wanted to be able to train with people who were doing the same thing that I was, you know, or had some of the same goals that I had. And it was a really great time. I had so many people that I trained with that were friends, you know, and I miss that.
Just to kind of go back real quick, so your first instructor, now that was Wushu, or what style?
Well, was that? He called it Northern Shaolin when we started, or Northern style Kung Fu. And, you know, I hadn't heard of the word wushu when I first started. I only heard of kung fu. And, you know, it was later that I found out that kung fu really doesn't mean martial arts. It means, you know, to gain skill at something or acquire skill at something that's difficult, you know, that takes discipline. So it implies discipline, dedication, and, you know, hard work, basically. And so that's how that got associated with Chinese martial arts. But Chinese martial arts is really wushu. Wushu means martial arts in Chinese. Okay. So, yeah, and I hadn't heard that word till about 1974, and I started in 1973. So, and that was when the first wushu troop came from China and demonstrated here. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Jet Li was like 6 years old or something, and it was part of that that team. And I didn't see them in person, but I saw them, I saw a video of it, and I was just blown away. And the coach of the Jiangsu province team was a member of that team also. And he was national champion and staff, and he was really good at the monkey style.
Very nice.
You know, I didn't even know I was looking at one of my future coaches when I, you know, when I saw that video back then. But I was just blown away by it. And then when I got to China, I was surprised to see that they don't fight. They don't fight, they don't spar. They just do forms and train, you know. And I think that, you know, like there was a lot of, I guess you could say, damage done to the martial arts by the Cultural Revolution. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to get rid of tradition. They got rid of a lot of temples, and martial arts people got put in jail and stuff like that. They, you know, and so, but, you know, the martial arts survived, you know, and it's such a big part of the culture over there. It's really, like, if you're a martial artist, it's really good to go visit Asia and see, you know, what it means to the people over there, you know. And like in China, you know, like when you get up early in the morning, everybody's doing Tai Chi in the parks together. And it's just cool, you know. It's just part of their history. It goes way, way back. And they honor that, you know, with their, you know, dedication and determination to keep it going. And now the sport has really evolved, in that they have the Sanda, and they've gone back to, you know, including kickboxing and grappling. It's a lot like MMA, you know, except they don't have the ground fighting. They have, you can follow up on the ground, but then they break it and stand them back up, basically. And but they have the leg kicks, and I mean, there's a lot of Muay Thai in it, and it's just cool. And that's what you remember Kung Lee?
Kung Lee? Oh yeah, yeah.
And he was, you know, they used to call it San Shou. Now, for some reason, it's called San Da. I don't know, but he did that. I think he was a world champion in that sport. And it's just cool. It's really cool. And I love to see, I love MMA. You know, I love watching it. I actually watch it with my son every week. You know, it's on almost every weekend now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just love to see the different ways that people do it and learn from it. I wrestled in high school, you know, because I thought it might help my martial arts. That was the only reason I did it, you know. because sometimes, you know, we had this guy named Ferdy Arbino up there that was a fighter. He was a Shito Ryu guy, but he used to take people down, and he was really good at it. And I was like, I don't want him to get me, you know. And so anytime he tried to take me down, I was successful in bringing him down with me, so he couldn't, you know, couldn't score a punch or, you know. But I love how, you know, the martial arts have evolved, and you get to see different approaches to that MMA situation. And I just love seeing it. I love seeing how the rules have really, it really developed into something meaningful, like a really meaningful sport, you know? And in the beginning, it looked like just people trying to kill each other and stuff. And, it looked like kind of like a lot of guys that were too tough for their own good kind of situation.
Oh, yeah.
Now you see the talent emerging, you know, where you see people who are just very talented, disciplined athletes, well-trained. And, you know, that's a sign that the sport has a good set of rules and they have a good organization. You know, it's managed well, you know.
So, would you say that you prefer the way it is now or the way that it used to be when it got started, which...
I prefer the way it is now. And I want to see where it gets to. Like every once in a while, they change a rule, you know, that's not working. Like the knees to the head. You can't knee to the head if somebody has a hand down or a knee down. And I think they just changed that. I just think it's really useful to be able to see the different martial arts like jiu-jitsu, wrestling, to see how people use them, you know, and it's amazing. I think it's really cool. So I'm a big fan. And, but when I moved down to, Los Angeles, in 1985, I didn't have anywhere to train, and I was friends and even been on some teams with Arlene Lamas, who won the gold medal in the 1988 Olympic Games in Seoul. Mm-hmm. She's really good. You know, she was a top. Her and Linda Denley were really, you know, the two top women's fighters, karate fighters in the U.S. And they were both teammates of mine on different occasions. Sorry, my dogs are anyway, she recommended a gentleman by the name of Steve Fisher, who I became really good friends with, and he was a former world ranked kickboxer, and he was a student of Mike Stone.
Oh,
and nice. Tadashi Yamashita.
Oh, very nice.
And he was a top point fighter, but he's one of those guys who could really fight, you know, and it was just really, really great place to go train. So I had used to do Friday nights up in Seattle, and I was missing that sparring thing, you know. Now I didn't really have a group of guys to spar with. And so I started going to his school. And I think that's where I met Chris Casamassa, because Chris Casamassa trained with Steve a lot too. And you know, I started telling everybody about him, and so, you know, more people started training with him. But Bill Wallace used to go down there. He was really close with Howard Jackson. And so you would see these guys down there and get to train with them, you know, and just a lot of, you know, it was kind of, you know, it wasn't just point fighting. It was fighting, you know? And so I love that. That was, and we became really close friends. Unfortunately, he passed away a few years back. I really miss him, but,
What was the reasoning for moving to LA? Was that
get in the business? Yeah. Okay. Because I moved here in 1985. I did China O'Brien in 1988. Anyway, I don't know why that does that.
no problem.
Yeah, I my instructor had moved down here, and he said, "Hey, Keith, you want to get in the movies, right?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Why don't you come down and work for me?" And so he was such a hustler too, because, you know, like he was abusive, you know, like he used to kick my ass, you know, when I was a kid, you know, until it got to the point where I could kick his ass. And then, you know, but he said, why don't you come down? You can teach at the school for a job and you can pursue your dreams, you know? I was like, oh, that's a great idea. So yeah, I moved down here and I started working for him and basically ended up running the whole school because he was always traveling and that's why he needed me. But I was able to have flexible hours enough. And then I think it was about 1986 or 87, I got a Gatorade commercial with Ernie Reyes Sr. Oh, nice. We went to this big cattle call. There were so many martial arts people there auditioning. And Ernie Reyes Sr. and I end up getting the part. And it was, they played it during the World Series, which was awesome. So I made pretty good money, you know, for that. And I got into the Screen Actors Guild with that job. And then the next thing I got was a movie called Picasso Trigger, which was with this guy. His name was Andy Sedaris, the director, and he used to direct for the NFL. He used to direct NFL games. Mm-hmm. And he always wanted to get into the movie business. And so he started making like spy movies with Playboy bunnies. And there's this actor named Steve Bond who was in a soap star, and he was the star of the movie. And the daughter's boyfriend was in my acting class, and he said, hey, they've got this role that I think you'd be right for. You want to come audition for it? I was like, yeah, why not? And I went in there. I've told this story before, but it's funny because, you know, they give you some sides. They call them sides with mm-hmm. your lines that you're going to say in the audition. And you go in there and they call it, you know, like reading, cold reading for, mm-hmm. for a part. It's an audition. And they put you on video and stuff. And I go in there. And I had these lines, you know, I had like two lines or something, and they didn't even have me do them. They go, say, hey. And I go, hey. And they go, can you do a backflip? And I go, yeah. And they go, you got the part. And so I love that story because it's just so funny that, you know, you're all worried about getting these lines that were probably not that much different than just saying, hey. Oh, yeah. And then they don't even have me say the lines that I memorized, you know?
Yeah. But the TV movie world is kind of fickle. So I've been on my local news news station actually a couple of times for different things. And every time they interview you and they'll talk to you for like an hour and you're come away thinking, you know, man, had this great interview, and then you get all excited and you're sitting there waiting for it to come on TV, and it comes on TV and they use like 2 minutes
of yeah.
the hour. Like,
that's pretty good. That 2 minutes? That's
so
usually I, you know, it'd be like 10 seconds or something like that.
Yeah. Very nice, very nice.
Oh man.
So kind of running back a little bit with the how did the China O'Brien part?
Yeah, that was pretty cool because I was, you know, I was competing at the time all over the world really, and I had taken a trip. We fought the South African national team, and Billy Blanks was on that team. Nasty Anderson, oh, nice. just like nice. You know, Linda Denley. Chuck Merriman, I don't know if you know him, unfortunately he's passed away too. He was the coach of that team. And Dave Cater, the editor of Inside Kung Fu magazine, came on that trip with us. And so I got to know him really well. I mean, we knew each other already because I'd done the cover of the magazine several times, and so I knew him, but he started going on covering tournament events and traveling with us. And so we got to know each other really well. And Fred Weintraub, who produced Enter the Dragon and produced China O'Brien, called him and asked him if he knew anybody who was right for that Dakota role. And he recommended me. And that was how I got that appointment. One day I got home from training and Fred Weintraub called me on the phone and I was like, come on, who is this? You know, I couldn't believe it. And he says, no, I want you to come over. I want to meet you, see if you're right for this role. And I was like, okay, let me take a shower. I just worked out. He goes, nope, come over right now. I had my kung fu pants on, you know, went straight over to his office. Within like 15 minutes, I was in his office meeting him. And he was like, so you know martial, you do some martial arts. And I stood up and I was like, you want to see some? I was just like, I was so pumped up, you know. But yeah, that's a really cool story because, you know, I was like on cloud nine. I couldn't believe I was sitting there with the producer of Enter the Dragon, my favorite movie of all time, you know, and somebody who had worked and knew Bruce Lee, you know. So it was just cool. You know, it was very cool. Yeah.
Very nice. And so it's my understanding that you broke your hand before starting or
I did. This part of the thumb right here, it broke completely through. Hmm. We were doing some promotional photos, photos and video for the making of or something like that before we started filming. And we were taking this, it was called an alpine slide. Mm-hmm. It was the summer, there was no snow. And so it's cement, you know, and you're coming, rolling down on this kind of cart-like thing. And my hand collided with a rock that was on the side of the thing. And the rock exploded. My hand exploded is what happened. I thought I was going to lose the job because they, you know, because I went and, you know, got a x-ray and it showed that the bones were like, one of them was going this way. One of them was going the other way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's no way I'm, you know, not going to do this. Just, you know, put it in a, you know. And that's why they came up with that thing on my wrist in order to ride a motorcycle, that my hand had been clobbered, and they put it in the story. So it worked. And I, you know, it didn't bother me at all. And then somewhere towards the end of filming, I got surgery and they put some pins in and realigned everything. And we just kept filming, you know, mm-hmm. And, that was an awesome experience, man. That was really cool. So
yeah, it actually always bothered me that I was like, why did they got to tape his hand up? But it worked out because then that just gives you more of a reason to kick people. So
yeah, I think it actually added to the story. Yeah, and the character.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. Wanted to since I've recently rewatched it. Can you talk a little bit about how King of the Kickboxers came about?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember how I got the audition, but I can't remember if I had an agent at the time or that was shortly after China O'Brien. And I remember going into the lobby, you know, the room, the waiting room, mm-hmm. before you go in for the audition, and Don the Dragon Wilson was sitting there, you know, and he went in before me and came out. So I assume he was up for the same role, and I think they were also considering Benny the Jet.
Oh, very nice.
So, yeah, that was a funny audition too, because I went in and the producer's name is NG, and you know, he's from Hong Kong and, you know, has made a lot of movies, and Keith Strandberg wrote the movie and he's written a lot of movies, and Lauren Avedon was the star of the movie, right? And he was in the audition to read the lines with me and stuff, and so we did some scene or something together, and they're like, okay, we want to see some martial arts. And I said, okay, yeah, no problem, you know. I stood up, I'm ready to go, and NG goes, Lauren, get out there with him. And I was like, sorry Lauren, but I gotta get this part, you know. And so I just went off on him, man. I was just like, you know, and I figured, this is a, you know, this is a Muay Thai kind of character, right? Mm-hmm. So I started kicking him on his legs. I would kick to the leg, come back, kick to the head, and just I was just going off. And I looked over at Angie, and he was laughing. He was. Yeah, I think Lauren felt like he was trying to, defend his life.
Yeah, anyway. I can imagine that there's quite a bit of difference from the kind of Hong Kong style action movie, filming setup versus a Hollywood.
Actually the Chyna O'Brien had a lot of Hong Kong. I mean, that was Golden Harvest. And so it had a lot of, did you hear that? Cause you froze.
We're good. Yeah, I got you. Okay. I got you.
There was a lot of Hong Kong stuntmen working on Chyna O'Brien and so that was my first time ever working with any of the guys from Hong Kong. But then on King of the Kickboxers, this was all the stunt guys were from Hong Kong, and except for the ones they hired locally, mm-hmm. just they do that just to save money so they don't have to fly people in, and stuff. And so it was awesome. And I didn't even know, I'm embarrassed to say it, but I didn't know who Corey Ewan was, uh-huh. When I did that movie, and they told me that Corey Ewan was coming to direct my fight scene, the one that my one fight scene in there. And, actually I had one kind of like fight scene with Billy Blanks too, but that fight, I love that fight. I'm really proud of it. And when you work on a Hong Kong movie, the director sits down when they're filming a fight, and the fight director takes over the directing. Mm-hmm. And that's what Corey Ewan was on this. And he directed a lot of he has directed a lot of Jason Statham's stuff. He was Jason Statham's like fight choreographer. And he also, I think he directed at least one of the, what's the driving movie he did?
Transporter.
Transporter. Yeah. He directed at least one of those, and he's just a really talented guy. And when he came on the set, there was a new level of respect that you felt from all the people working on the film. All I can remember is, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the E.F. Hutton commercial. When E.F. Hutton speaks, everybody listens.
Oh, yeah.
And so they show, all of a sudden everybody gets quiet to hear what E.F. Hutton is going to say about investing their money. It was mm-hmm. an investment firm. And when he came on the set, all of a sudden everybody looked like soldiers, It was, but he was really relaxed, And he would just say, okay, these guys are going to come at you here. What would you like to do to them, And I'd say, how about this, and go, great. Can you hold your foot out and then turn, And I said, yeah, I can do that. And then, he said, I want you to jump up and kick this guy three times. Can you do that? And that was the way that fight got put together. And it was all done in, if I remember right, it was like 5 or 6 hours, maybe, maybe not even that long, including, and a lot of that time is for the camera setups and stuff like that, and setting the lighting and stuff. But, we had a shot where the camera was on tracks moving. Mm-hmm. And so they had to set that up, but the way they shoot stuff, you don't need that much rehearsal because, they shoot it in pieces, which is really cool about the Hong Kong, the way they do it in Hong Kong. It's really, I think, makes it much easier to really go for it in a fight, because you're not trying to remember a whole fight all at once and having everything end up perfect, you get to concentrate on a little area, exactly where the camera is. So you get the right angles for the hits and stuff like that. So I love that style of filmmaking. And I think American filmmakers have learned a lot from those guys, you know? And so it changed, you know, the way they shoot action and stuff.
For sure. So there's a million other things I want to get to, but I do want to touch on something. I mean, we of course have to talk about Mortal Kombat, but before we get to that, are comfortable with saying, or were there any roles that you were up for that you didn't get, or any roles that you kind of wish you could have gotten at a
Yes. Well, after after China O'Brien, Fred Weintraub was really a big supporter or believer in me, and he wanted to get a multiple picture deal going with Golden Harvest, where I would move to Hong Kong, you know, for at least a while. Mm-hmm. And they did end up offering me that. And I think Fred wanted to produce those movies, you know, and that I had acquired a pretty big entertainment lawyer at the time who was representing me. And he kept saying, Keith, why do you want to go do this? You know, you're just getting started here and you're getting a lot of offers. Why don't you just stay here? Do it here, you know? Mm-hmm. And he made it really, you know, he kind of manipulated that deal, I want to say, you know, like he made it. So he kept, like, excuse my French, dicking around with it so much that they got kind of pissed off. And they're like, who does this guy think he is? He's not a big movie star, you know? And it broke my heart when that deal went away. They offered me a 3-picture deal. I think it was a 5-picture deal with 3 guaranteed. The pay was guaranteed whether they made the movie or not. They call it pay or play.
Oh, nice.
And I wanted to take the deal. I wanted to take the deal, you know, because that didn't mean I had to move to Hong Kong. It just meant I was going there to do some movies, kind of like what Cynthia did, you know? And so that deal got blown out of the water. And then Fred Weintraub tried to get me a deal going at Warner Brothers. And he was able to get a script written for me. But this was a time when Brandon Lee was getting, you know, they had just produced Showdown in Little Tokyo.
Oh, yes.
And they wanted to see how that was going to do. And they said, if that's successful, we'll make your movie too. And I think if I remember right, they thought that Showdown in Little Tokyo kind of tanked, you know? And so they didn't, they never picked up that movie, but he had a whole script written for me about, a guy whose parents own a market in central Los Angeles, you know, like a convenience store, and they get robbed and murdered. And he's really frustrated. He's actually in the police academy when they get murdered, and he gets really frustrated that the police aren't doing anything about it. So he quits the police academy and goes and investigates the murders on his own. And that was, I thought it was a really cool premise. But that's just on some shelf someplace now. Then he introduced me to an executive at Warner Brothers, and they put I got a couple of TV pilots out of it, and neither one got picked up. So it seemed, you know, it seemed like for a while that the lawyer was right. You know, I was getting things going, but never got anything completely going. But I got 2 tries for series that nobody ever saw, even though we shot pilots or, you know, presentations. They call them pilot presentations. And one of them I really loved. It was kind of based on the Kung Fu series, which I always loved. It was called Noble Quest, where a kid that's born in Vietnam, he has a GI father, and Vietnamese mother, and the father goes back home and doesn't raise him, and he grows up, and then his mom dies and gives him his dad's high school ring and says, go find your dad, you know. And so he comes to America looking for his dad and gets wrongly blamed of a murder. So it's just like The Fugitive, or you know.
What came to mind was Vanishing Son with Russell Wong.
Yeah, definitely.
Love dearly. And yeah, that's a very, very similar kind of premise to that.
I think this could have been a successful show if it would have got a shot, you know. And then I did it for the same, you know, this was the producer that produced Roots. Mm-hmm. David Wolper, his company produced that pilot. And then there was a guy named Bernie Safransky who worked there. And he got a, later on, I started Suzanne DePass, who was with Motown Records. Have you heard of her? Mm-hmm. She was huge. Like, she's at least, you know, credited with discovering Michael Jackson, you know, and she's around for a long time. She was representing me, and they got another show together, and John Landis directed it. It was called Tropical Heat, and it took place in Hawaii. We went and shot the pilot in Hawaii, and I think that one could have been successful too. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, like, one of the problems was around that time, a lot of things are timing, you know. There were a lot of movie stars that were starting to go into television, and because it's, you know, it's a regular job,
yeah.
You know, and you make, you know, if you have a successful series, they just make a lot of money. And so we were competing, me, who's a nobody basically, is competing against movie stars, you know? And so it's hard to get your foot in the door, you know?
Yeah.
But had a couple tries. And then he put me in a couple of episodes of The Adventures of Robin Hood. So I went to, which he produced, and Richard Norton was the stunt coordinator, and they shot it in Lithuania, which was cool, going over there. And I played a samurai one time, who was kind of a good guy. And then I played a bad guy on one episode who was sort of like a Mongol guy. And that was fun. And I think that might have been the last time I really worked for Fred.
I've kind of silently been screaming about this for a long time. I know it'll never happen, but there really needs to be a channel for pilots, failed pilots. Just 24/7, just every failed pilot that's ever been shot, just to show that, because there's...
Maybe the reason why they can't do that is because they would have to... I think it's legal, actually. It's legal reasons, because then they would have to pay... residuals to all the actors on the thing, or they would have to get their approval, get them all to sign off on it. And it's probably such a headache that they can't make that happen. But that is a cool idea.
I mean, there's,
yeah, there, that would be really interesting.
So many
screen tests, I've heard about that. Screen tests and pilots.
Yeah.
You know,
there's so many cool things out there that could have been that just, at least needs,
oh,
the public,
you know what?
Needs to get
got,
their eyes on.
The other thing is, I've talked about this a couple of times, I think, is so they put me on a holding deal at Warner Brothers. So they had me, so I was still like under contract with them, even though those pilots didn't get picked up. And then they decided to bring back the Kung Fu series with David Carradine.
Yeah.
And so they said, Keith, we want you to play his son. You're going to go out to... meet him at his ranch. And so I go out there one day, and he has a whole band there that he plays in, that of his friends. And they're all there. I didn't see David yet. And it's a very rustic place with horses and, you know, out, it's called Sun Valley. And then after we're sitting there for about, I don't know, maybe a half an hour or something, he comes around the corner of the house, and he's wearing an outfit from the Kung Fu with a
oh, nice
with dragons coming down front, and he has a three-sectional staff.
Oh.
And I go over, hey, how you doing? Hey, nice to meet you. And he throws the three-sectional staff to me, and I catch it. And he says, show me something. And so I can do the three-sectional staff. And I just started going at it, you know. And it breaks. One of the sections breaks free, and it goes right by his head.
Oh.
It almost hit him in the head. And he goes, that was so cool, man. He was just blown away. He couldn't believe it. And it was an actual prop from the Kung Fu series.
Oh, nice.
That's why it wasn't very well made, I guess.
Nice.
But I didn't check it. I didn't check it to make sure it was safe. I just started going, you know. And that was funny. And then after about a couple hours of them playing music and stuff, and I got stung by a bee on his porch. One of his friends comes over and says, David wants to talk to you. And there was an executive from Warner Brothers there too. And I go over to him and he takes my hand and he kisses my hand and he goes, you got the card. And I go, cause he got approval on, mm-hmm. you know, and then, you know, the NAFTA agreement.
Yeah.
You know, you can only take like one actor, one, producer, you know, there's some contract deal that was a part of NAFTA. And so I got aced out of that one too. Mm-hmm. And they hired a Canadian actor to play his son.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy, you know, that ran for a few seasons,
yeah.
you know. And I always, man, that's what I mean, like timing things. Because originally they were going to shoot it here,
mm-hmm.
but they decided to save money and move it to Canada,
oh, yeah.
you know. And so there went my third television, like a lead role in a television series try.
Well, that might have been okay because they don't need the son upstaging upstaging the main star. So I think I think your fight skills are considerably better than Mr. Carradine.
He was such an interesting actor though, and you know, such a great supporter of martial arts, you know. I really dug him. So anyway.
Okay, well I don't want to go too long, so we'll I mean, like I mentioned, there's so many things in your career and your journey that I'd want to cover. So we'll definitely have to try and do some more another time. But I did have to at least touch on Mortal Kombat. I will just kind of quickly tell the story of so I at the first Kenpo school that I was training at, we had heard about, you know, oh, they're going to do a Mortal Kombat movie. And, you know, we're all fans of the video game and everything. And the opening night at midnight, our local theater had a showing of Mortal Kombat. And pretty much our entire Kenpo school went to basically took over the movie theater. And
is that in San Diego?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we just pile into this movie theater. We're excited to watch Mortal Kombat, and we are just kind of losing our mind. Just of course because of the two fight scenes that were not originally going to be in the movie, and
right.
thank God that they were included. We were just losing our mind, and you know, sorry to future guest Chris Casamassa, but I'm sorry, the reptile fight, just that was, I lost my mind because when we're watching the movie and they have the CGI reptile, and it's like what is this? Like we want to see reptile. And
yeah.
when they do the little morphing thing, and then you just hear reptile.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
We just completely lost our mind. And then just to see the fight and the fight being in that kind of Hong Kong action style and just really kind of brutal especially when you compare it to the other fights in the movie. And just seeing that was just blew my mind. So, you know, sorry, Chris, but the reptile fight was the one that did it for me.
Now he's not going to want to come on your show. So, you know what? When he comes on, just go ahead and tell him that his fight is your favorite.
Yeah. I'll
you do that with everyone anyway, right?
I'll have to hide this episode before I get him on. But yeah, I just was totally blown away by that.
I think that, you know, one of the things is one of the advantages that I had was, or that Rob and Shu and I had, was that we knew each other really well. We had trained together a lot, and he went down to Steve Fisher's too. I mean, I'm pretty sure I was the one who recommended him to go down there, but we're really comfortable, so we can go for it, you know, mm-hmm. when we're working together. And he was, you know, really cool about like kind of letting me put some input in, you know, and stuff like that. And but it was just a good, you know, amount of teamwork. And I loved the set, and I loved the director, who was very, you know, I think he had a very strong vision. I still think it's the best of the Mortal Kombat movies. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I had good hopes for the second one. It was a little lackluster. I mean, of course, your fight with J.J. Perry was good. I'm still a little kind of scratching my head that they wanted to kind of do it under the bridge and couldn't really see each other that well. And
yeah, lighting was an issue there. Yeah.
But I admit I was very excited to see it pop up unmasked this time. So it was like,
yeah.
On the first one, I was like, I think I recognize those eyes. and then to see it in full face was very nice. So good stuff there. So so we're going to go ahead and move to our lightning round here as we head towards wrapping up. And and then just got a few okay. little questions, and then we will wrap up this episode. First question being, do you have a favorite technique?
Not really. I have a few favorites, you know, like I love hook kicks and spinning hook kicks. I love side kicks and back kicks, you know, so on the kicking side of things. And I've already told you that I love boxing. So, you know, every time I work on a film though, they're always asking me to kick, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, but, I love to punch too.
Oh yeah. No, I hear you. I've been with getting back into, you know, boxing and getting into Muay Thai, just strap on those gloves and just there's just this whole different feeling, and as we're working around and slipping and just that movement is just it's just so energizing and just feels so good to work on those combinations and things like that. So
I mean, you know, like now you see it, you know, I mean, guys like Don Wilson and Benny did it, you know, they did head movement, you know, quite well, you know, mm-hmm. But in the early days of MMA, you didn't see that. And now you're starting to see like these guys, this is what I'm talking about, kind of like the evolution of it. Mm-hmm. They're getting much better at defense. And I love to see that because I always think it makes the thing way more interesting when there's a balance of defense and offense. And the best boxers have really good defense, you know. And now MMA is starting to get like that. People who can prevent the takedown, people who can move their head, you know. Yep. It's pretty cool.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite form?
A favorite form? Well, my favorite form, I had two that I competed with, and one of them is the staff, the long staff, mm-hmm. and the other one is Eagle Claw, which I learned in that Jiangsu province. And I wouldn't say I got very good at it there, but I came back home and I worked on it, you know. And that was one of my most successful forms to compete with.
Very nice. Very nice.
The Eagle Claw.
I like it. All right. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Well, I said the staff. It was really, I did the staff, double broadsword, and what was the other one? Oh, the three-sectional staff. Staff, broadsword, three-sectional staff. I would be able to do any one of those three on any given day that I was competing.
Oh, nice.
So if sometimes they have a tie and you have to do a runoff with a different form.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had those backups, which was good.
Very cool. I like it. All right. Last question. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Well, yeah, I would have to say Bruce Lee. I'd want to train with Bruce Lee, you know. I'd want to actually spar with him. And even if I get my ass kicked, it would be an honor. And, you know, I would love that, though. And the other one would be Manny Pacquiao,
oh, nice.
Who I know would kick my ass. You know, if I was trying to box Manny Pacquiao, can you imagine?
Oh.
That would be a nightmare. But, you know, I just rewatched him fighting Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. You know, they say that Pacquiao was injured, but they both looked really good. But I think Mayweather did outpoint him, mm-hmm. you know. But it was a really good fight, man. You could see where he surprised Mayweather several times. And even though Mayweather had quite a bit of a advantage, he was able to light him up several times. So really? You got to be good to do that.
Oh yeah, for sure. All right. So we are now at the point for shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you like, or if there's anything that I wanted to get out there that we didn't touch on, you have
the
floor.
I want to say, you know, I think Black Creek is going to be out soon. I don't know exactly when, but I think it's going to be out soon. So go see it, see what you think. First time doing a Southern accent for me, and I loved it. So fun. That's about it. I do my, fitness programs. That's how I keep myself in shape. I said, I want to have a job that keeps me in shape. And so I teach fitness. So if anybody's interested, you can always go to, Keith Cook Fitness or The Ring Workout. And you can probably contact me through that website if you're interested. And I teach kickboxing and strength training. And it's, you know, as I get older, I feel like my fitness is evolving into more wellness.
Yeah.
Rather than getting crushed, you know, it's more about, you know, staying in shape and preserving my range of motion and flexibility and balance and all those things. And it's a wonderful thing, you know. And I have the pleasure of training a lot of police officers now, and not in fighting stuff, not in self-defense stuff, in fitness stuff, you know. They go through a lot of, you know, challenges, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally, and they a lot of times are dealing with PTSD, and it's really important for them to work out, to exercise, and also to do a kind of an exercise that's sort of, you know, where you're breathing right and doing all that stuff. And so I'm really into that kind of stuff. Learning how to breathe correctly when you're exercising, and so that's about it. I won't keep going.
You can I got plenty of tape, so can go as long as you want. But I will definitely include links to all of your things in the show notes, and if there's any any other links that you think of.
I am going to do a movie in 2 weeks. I'm going to Germany. Oh. Movie called Lion Fist, and which also has Keith Stromberg as one of the writers, or the writer, one of the writers. And so I'm really looking forward to that. It's a good character role. And that's about it. So watch for that one too.
Well, we'll do. I will certainly continue to keep watching everything that you're in, and follow whatever else that you're doing. I will get all of those links out there. For the listeners that have not watched Keith's work, get out there and see it. And I just once again thank you so much for being on. Hopefully we can
get you on again. Thank you for having me.
To get into more of your story. Also vigorously working on getting your various co-stars on, so maybe we can work out a reunion of some sort at some point. But yeah, I just thank you again for taking the time to chat with me. And
I'm glad that you reached out, and you know, you were at that. We met at that screening of Mortal Kombat, right?
Yes, that was amazing.
The Fort Worth area,
amazing. Yeah,
yeah. And so that was really cool. That was a really fun night, and I was really pleasantly surprised about the turnout.
Yeah, yeah.
And so So. Anyway, it was nice meeting you, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, no, thank you so much, and we will. I will. Can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear, and I will be in touch when this is ready to go out.
Thank you, Reggie.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.